Right. Rinpoche is making the auspicious verses of the noble ones. The eight auspicious verses. The praise of the Buddhas to the eight great Bodhisattvas, to the four heavenly kings and so forth. Saying that today is a very special day, being that 2008, the first day of the year, and it's such an auspicious day. He actually thinks he hopes to have a good beginning, a good sign for the beginning of the year, which is why, for the sake of all the students here, he's making the supplication request that we can all fulfill our wishes and that everything will go according to our plans in this coming new year. So today, teaching, we are going to begin now. During a Dharma teaching, first of all, we actually will need to have the kind of idea, motivation for the sake of saving, liberating all sentient beings as far as the limits of the universe. So I will now, for the sake of all these beings, I shall supplicate the master to give the teaching. And this is the very first step, and there's the motivation that we need to have, such a good beneficial motivation we need to have at the beginning of the teachings. So today we are able to in Singapore, this Dharma Center, to be here together in the center. This is an extremely great, profound conditions where Dharma teachings can be taught to all of us. And Rinpoche said he feels very honored and glad to be here to share the Dharma, to impart the Dharma to all of us. So especially we are able to, under these circumstances, we are able to receive a precious human rebirth, to come into contact with such a profound Dharma treasure, which is that where Jambuvipa, the land where we are in, where the light of Dharma has shone, and to be able to born in this area where Dharma has been taught, and the light of Dharma is able to come into contact with the Mahayana teachings, which is even more extraordinary. And moreover, in addition to that, able to get into touch with the Vajrayana teachings through the Kautuk lineage, which is about more than 800 years lineage, or there are certain under another mature standard is more than 1,000 years, and which is that even before there is Dharma or there's monastery in Tibet, it's already more than 1,200 years. And through the Kautuk lineage and our monastery, the Kautuk monastery, the lineage transmission actually has given rise to 100,000 rainbow body accomplishments. And and we are so fortunate to be able to know the Dharma through this lineage. We should definitely have this reciprocal, a relative kind of joy and rejoicings about this. So actually, we have all received in the Dharma saying that human body is precious and rare, and upon obtaining this rare and precious human rebirth, and we don't actually cherish and use it well, through the practice of Dharma, then you'll be a very big waste. And for example, we can't just pass through the human life in a very shallow, superficial way without extracting the essence of the human body. So so if you don't practice the Dharma, there'll be wasting of the human birth. Especially this human body being so precious in the Dzogchen preliminaries, in the course path and result of the Dzogchen teachings, it's been pointed out very clearly that how the human body is precious, and it should really, if we have the time to go through these texts, and it will be difficult for us to understand why this human body is precious, the reason why it is precious, and including the cause of the human rebirth, the cause, through considering example or simile, because we didn't really create the positive karma to reap a human rebirth, and through simile, it's because if this through this entire universe, all sentient being, to make a relative comparison, example, beings in the hell, there are actually like the dust or the atoms of the earth, and with regard to the Hungry Ghost Rhyme, it's it is like the sands in the Ganges River, a river in India, and how many dust can we find in the Ganges River, and that's exactly like the number of hungry ghosts. So with regard to the four great oceans in the universe, and so that's like the number of dust in the four great oceans of animals. We've got the Asura, it is like the snowflakes that fall during winter. That's the number as much as that of the Asura rhyme. Human and the gods rhyme, actually. It is like the dust motes that we can contain on top of one single thumb. Hence, first is cause, second is simulation, and through considering the number from different angles and perspective, we can know that human body is that precious. If you do not cherish and use the precious human body well, then there's something known we call is impermanence, and the advent of actually impermanence is equally consistently applied to everyone, the high officials, the beggars by the roadside, the wealth, the poor. The impermanence doesn't make distinctions with regard to young or old even, and we should always know that we need to face impermanence, and this is something we all need to face, impermanence. And when impermanence come and we express regret, even then it will be too late for us. So with regard to death, and we all should know that I'm still young now. Perhaps when I reach 6 to 70 or 80 years old, when I advance in age, I can do Dharma practice when I'm that age. So when I'm old, if we have this kind of thought, actually, but then death, as to when death will come, we are not able to predict accurately when we are going to die. We are not even able to control this reality. So hence, under such circumstances, the meaning is that we do not know under what circumstances, through what reason, through what cause, we will die. Now, for example, even with this technologically advanced society of ours, even then, we're not able to accurately predict when death would come. And so we should not simply just try to enjoy what we currently have, our wealth, our enjoyment, happiness, and then to actually superficially pass through our human life. So, for example, if you've already received this human rebirth, regardless of how unwilling and reluctant we are to think about the term death, but one finding is eventual, is an inevitability that we shall definitely have to face death one day. So therefore, Rinpoche, what he means is that now we are all very healthy and all sitting here in a very secure manner, save me, but in 100 years' time, no, even without names may then be forgotten. In 100 years' time, without any trace in on earth, this is a very real possibility that we all have to consider. That in this earth, we need to remind ourselves about this. So, at the time of our death, we all need to know that we need to not to have attachment, but to be able, we will need to actually relinquish the closest people to ourselves, our daughters, our relatives, or our accumulated wealth, our possessions. All these got to be absolutely, completely given up, and to be given up completely. It's almost like a naked state, as we say, to leave this world. So, in the text is also said that when the king has reached his life's final stage, even the king will need to leave the world, and when the king leaves the world, everything that the king has, including all the territory, dominance over it, all the subjects under his control, actually will all need to be given up. Will need to be left behind as he leave the world. So it's not within his control, and so the only that when he's leaving his life at that time, and to enter into the next world, the only thing that actually follows him like a shadow will be that of the karmic consequences that the karmic consequences is committed in this life, the volition he has committed in when he was living. This is the only thing that actually follows him at the time of his death like a shadow, and these two can be applied in our case to each and every one of us when death comes. So, what the text means is that when the time of death comes, even though we could be of utmost unwillingness, this is a reality, is a pragmatic affair, practical thing, that we will indeed will need to leave behind a possession and people so dear and close to ourselves, and even though we are very unwilling to leave, and our so-called soul of our body will be the only entity that's living our living human body, and this consciousness, if we are to say that if we've committed the positive or negative actions when we are alive, all these positive and negative actions will be the only things that will follow our consciousness as we pass away. So if you did the good karma, then we go to the three upper realms, and we committed the actions, there's the only way available open to us will be the three lower realms, and when we're reaching in the lower realms, there will be suffering, intermittent suffering, unceasing intermittent suffering. There's simply no such thing as happiness we can talk about, and with regard to human realm, will be that of the suffering of change, which means that even though we're happy now, all this happiness is not permanent, and this change is actually always in a great flux of change, and so life, death, rebirth, and so forth, all these things, especially regard to human rebirth, is known as the suffering of change. And about Kang Gong Ma, and actually it means that rebirth in the God's rhyme, or in the form rhyme, the formless rhyme, these beings temporarily they shall enjoy certain bliss in samsara, but ultimately they are not free of samsara, and hence therefore, regardless of where we are in the three upper, three lower rhymes, so long as we are still within the sixth rhyme of existence of samsara, we should definitely know and get it clear that have this very strong understanding. It's actually a fiery pit. It's compared to a fiery pit, or actually the snake's a viper's nest, or that is just like a honey on a blade, on a sharp blade, and there is not any exact any actual moment of happiness or bliss in samsara, and that we are always in a very dangerous, insecure, unstable situation, and we shouldn't have any attachment or love, and should learn to actually have detachment from these samsaric pleasures. So why we need to practice the Dharma, and we should, through these manner, as I said earlier, then we know why there is a need for us to practice Dharma. We know that everything in samsara actually nothing in samsara is worthy of our attachment, and then to give up to revulsion, to renunciation in samsara, and then the only thing that is left for us to do in samsara, which is liberation from samsara. And in order to attain liberation from samsara, the only thing is to rely upon the authentic Dharma, which is that the Buddha's teachings. And it is only through this way that we will traverse upon the path. Otherwise, many times we are saying that, the Buddha protect us, the Bodhisattva help protect us, we shall burn incense and prostrate to the Buddhas, and all these mannerisms and actions of ours actually things should qualify ourselves as a Buddhist practitioner, but however, all these things are not able, if we are not able to change our karmic course, and then all the Buddhists and Bodhisattvas will then not be able to bring us upon the path to salvation or liberation from samsara, and it will still be in there. Therefore, the Buddha Shakyamuni has said that, how do you attain Buddhahood? I've already taught all of you as to whether you are able to attain liberation is relying upon you yourself alone, and upon reliance on you yourself alone actually means as to whether or not we choose to do the Dharma, we're willing to do the Dharma, to implement the Dharma teachings that we have received. And upon this point, we need to make to understand. Which means that from the bottom of our heart, we wish to attain a Buddhahood, to attain Bodhi or enlightenment. So, which means, if we got to karmic consequences or karmic relationships, to understand the karma very accurately, understand how karma works, hence to have strong conviction, commitment and faith in it, before we are able to attain enlightenment. So, So, saying that whatever things that we do in our life, our trading, or with regard to these agricultural activities, or the manufacturing in the factories, all these mundane work, even though and within this commercial work, agriculture, farming, etc., all these actually there are negative karmic consequences from them, and even though we can't really see killing, but we do that in the process. We do actually have done a lot of killing, and there are a lot of things like fraudery. And we need to the cost is 15, we need to sell it for 20 in order to make a profit, etc. All these things, even though we think that it is an eventual inevitable way of life, the way of the commercial enterprise, but these actions are actually undharmic, and all these actions that we make behind them, there are negative consequences behind, and eventually these negative actions will yield its consequence as obstacles on our path, and it could become a cause for us in the future lives, negative actions in the future lives. So therefore, when there is a time of our death, and even minor actions that we have done in our life and the time of death, this could actually be a cause for us to be reborn in the hell or the three lower realms. So, which means that when we are after we have been reborn, the three lower realms, it will then be very difficult for us to get the human rebirth again, or to hear about the Buddha's teachings ever again. And it's almost like a perpetual, permanent residence in samsara, to receive endless, countless sufferings in samsara, and for the only way that we can attain liberation would be to dedicate our body, speech and mind from the depths of our hearts through our greatest efforts to actually implement, to do Dharma practice, our body, speech and mind towards Dharma practice, and then the results then would be able to bring us to complete enlightenment, the state of Buddhahood. So what it means is that now that we have actually attained this precious human rebirth, and what you can do is you can choose to go up or choose to go downwards, and the choice, the ability to choose, is within our grasp in our palms. So whether we choose to stay on in samsara or to actually embark upon the journey to liberation, and if we do things properly, the ship of liberation, which is actually our human body itself, and which means that everything, that the foundation, that the first absolute foundational stone, which is that we are actually dropping a foundational stone into the sea. So if we don't actually free ourselves from this yoke, which is yoking us to samsara, to gain liberation, which means human body, we do have the choice, and we need to make the right decision to free ourselves from the yoke. Therefore, we need to grasp this precious opportunity that within this limited time of ours to make the best use of the opportunity coming up and to gain, to embark upon the journey to enlightenment, which is this journey being that of the Dharma. So Rinpoche is saying that in Singapore, because Singapore is something known as industrialized, progressive, advanced society, and for us to be able to use a lot of our sufficient time to dedicate to Dharma practice is almost impossible, but we actually need to grasp every possible opportunity and instance that we can do the Dharma. For example, if you're in the car, especially transport time could be quite substantial, or when in between the work which is rest time, all these are opportunities for us to do the Dharma, and we need to learn to make use of this limited time resource to properly do the Dharma. And this is something that is possible, that is within our ability to do so. So also in practice of the Dharma, and if we need to be timely, and this is something like a coward, a viper, a poisonous snake actually confronts the coward. The coward will jump, or perhaps for that of a beauty, the hair is being on fire, being the hair of a beautiful lady being set on fire, then she will definitely make that her priority. So Dharma is simply like that. We can't really wait, and we need to actually exert the fastest possibility, urgency in our Dharma practice. So Rinpoche is saying that I need to do the Dharma, I need to do the Dharma, but just saying so is pointless, is useless, and if we don't do the Dharma, then the world, the time doesn't wait for us. So what we could not call the Dharma, this Dharma, what is Dharma? And what is the Dharma for? And Dharma is our counter actions, our remedy against our defilements, our afflictions, and it's not confined to any particular aspect or forms. So this is like what Rinpoche is saying. We are all seated here, but if our body is here, if our mind is in the family, mind is with work, and the mind is going everywhere but not concentrated on Dharma, then this is only in terms of form only, and a practitioner only in terms of the aspect or the form. So we need to know that once we reach a Dharma place and we are going for a practice, a group practice together, we need to make effort, saying that when we are here, like what I have Rinpoche said earlier, we all need to give rise to a proper and right kind of motivation. Now what Rinpoche means is that we have the right motivation, otherwise it is simply only an aspect, only name, a Dharma practitioner. Thank you. So like normal days, what Rinpoche mean is that we need to actually use a concentrated mind to do the six syllable mantra, Guru Rinpoche mantra, the 100 syllable mantra, Vadasattva, etc. All these, the Akshobhya Buddha's mantra, etc. All these mantras, we actually need to recite them in a concentrated manner. These mantras are uncommon, even if one recitation alone, the merit is inexhaustible. Like the initiation yesterday, every mantric syllable actually possesses of inconceivable merits, and so therefore even if there is no direct translation into Tibetan, why these mantric syllables are not mantras are not translated into Tibetan or any other languages, that's to retain the sound and the merits and the accumulated energy within the Sanskrit sound syllables of the mantra alone. So therefore Rinpoche is now reminding all of us that we should definitely do many of these mantras, and the actions, the merits, etc. will yield very great inconceivable results. So Rinpoche is saying this also like actually atop a seed, or that we're saying that a seedling will definitely grow into a small little plantation, a plant, a flower, and to bear fruit, etc. You have all this ability, but there are causes, conditions that are required for the plant to flower. So the same thing happens with our mantra recitation, as all these great inconceivable sutras recounted in the sutras. But if we don't recite them, we don't do them with the right, with the concentration, with good motivation, it won't have its function, it won't have its strength. There's something like the medicine that we take. Now, when we see the medicine, is simply just one tablet, white in color, white colored pill tablet, and we do not know that what exact are the contents within the tablet. So, when we actually partake of this tablet of pill, and it will be able to be an effective remedy against our illness. So, you have all these effects. Therefore, within all these mantra, we should know it's similar, which means like a medicine, we don't take them, it will not take the medicine, and it will not be helpful to our illness. But when we take the medicine, it will help us to get rid of suffering. Now, similarly, the mantra is like that. It's like medicine, or like you are doing planting. The way it works is the same, along similar principles. You actually do it with a right concentration, all this mantra will definitely bring us to its liberation. Everybody implant within the seed of enlightenment within our mind, and all these great profound inconceivable merits, and this is an exhortation for all of us to do the mantras. So now the earth includes the human rebirth, the death and permanence, karmic conditions, and then the suffering of samsara, and the path to liberation, and how do we put that? It means the merits towards liberation. All these are simple explanations being given, a succinct exposition about these four topics. I think that's a good one. Rinpoche is saying that in Singapore, this area now, there are many gurus, Rinpoche, Kempos, etc. All these lamas are always coming into Singapore and having lots of ceremonies, Dharma programs, etc. All of you have actually attended similar programs, but if you're not with motivation, proper motivation to attend this program, then the effect is actually limited. And the benefits are actually limited. Like as above, I've already said that Buddha Shakyamuni, the way to liberation, I've already given to all of you. And as to whether liberation is won, is up to our own individual choice and the degree to which we implement the teachings. And even if the Buddha is here today, the Buddha is going to teach a lot of great unparalleled Dharma, but actually we don't implement all these Dharma teachings, it will be stay the same, which is that there will be nothing special, benefits will be come out. So similarly, what is meant by practice? And practice actually is all dependent on the individual practitioner. So Rinpoche is saying that there's one or two Kimpos in the center, they don't teach and they don't practice. All these Kimpo is the same. All these Kimpos, Lama staying here, if you don't practice, this applies to them. So generally speaking, holistically considering, now we are being born in this world with all different defilements, afflictions, there's nobody who suffered much more than me, nobody is more afflicted than myself, every one of us were things like that. But why do we need to be so afflicted and be under so much suffering? And why did suffering come to us? Now actually in this world, now what Rinpoche is saying, that almost everybody is actually same, fair, everybody, there's no being who is happy in the world, and the cause of all these unhappiness in the sentient beings is because of egoism or self-centeredness or self-cherishing attitude is too strong, everything being central, the centrality of the self, the over-importance, egoistical consideration, that's the cause of suffering. Conversely, considering now, how is the Buddha? Now the Buddha is already forgotten about the self, and the only thing that he functions is for the benefit of other sentient being, because the strength of benefiting other sentient being, he's able to be omniscient, omniscient wisdom, which means he sees all and be able to free from all the suffering. So and is it enlightenment. So why is this so? That because the Buddha has no self, no sense of a self, is not working for the benefit of oneself, but always working for all sentient beings. So he has actually transcended all these mental afflictions, all kinds of suffering.
Now,
if we also wish to attain Buddhahood, we need to actually learn and follow what the Buddha's example, giving rise to bodhicitta, giving rise to loving compassion, and through these, gradually, slowly, we can actually give or to make all these kind of karmic habits of ourselves, instead of put obsession being the central main activities, and with these our mental affliction suffering will gradually lessen, and from these eventually to attain liberation from all these sufferings. So therefore, it means that through this manner, how are we able to actually train our mind or transform our mind, and which means to put sentient being as being the central way of the central as the important prime importance of our life, like in the Dzogchen preliminary text, what's my perfect teacher would say, that how do we do the four immeasurables, which is the love, compassion, equanimity, so forth, and so which means the one of the way to practice is the exchange of self for others, or the equalization of self and others, and which means to put others as being our prime concern, to give up our giving up I, and but to put others prime importance, is all this way of transforming the mind through all this manner to put as our practice. So now this portion now Rinpoche in the first 2 days Rinpoche is also saying that all sentient being the universe, we got to see them as being like our present day in our present life parents, and if we're able to see these, then which means to put others as being of our prime concern and importance, true with these as our springboard, then it will not be difficult to engage in Dharma practice, like our so-called soul or consciousness, and this entire world, when it was formed, the consciousness was also there. So we can't really say that when or where this consciousness begins, and therefore all sentient beings from this beginningless time have all been our parents, and so under these circumstances, their kindness, their sacrifice, and being parents, people would understand the sacrifice they're willing to give to their offspring. So in the past we do not know, but now that we have learned the Dharma, and we know that every sentient being are exactly like the parents of our present life, we actually need to have the wish to repay their kindness, and so to please all beings as are being our first, our priority, to treat them like our present life's parents, and so then it would not be difficult to engage in bodhicitta. So now, Rinpoche, if you do not engage in Dharma practice through this manner, like in our daily lives, we have many friends, we have many enemies, and due to work and life, due to business matters, in our company, in so many different aspects of our life, there are people, we actually have this kind of people who oppose ourselves, and we do not, how do we deal with these opposition, we do not see them indeed through the way I've taught, we can't really equalize them, or we can't have an equanimity towards different people in our life. So Rinpoche is saying that even though we are saying like that, but even for he himself, Rinpoche, being so too hectic, over hectic schedule, he has only one mother in his present life, and this is not even have a chance to see his own mother. He has so many students and friends, and they are always reminding him that, oh please, go back to see your mother. And to always remind him about that, to be able to serve his mother. And of course, Rinpoche, his own mother, is an extremely kind person, but because of his dharmic obligations and which he can't relinquish his duties, and but for himself is concerned, and he's not been able to actually carry out filial duties towards his mother. So what we say, and the kindness of our parents is really difficult to repay them, and it can be found in the sutra, the difficulty of repaying the kindness of the mother. In all these sutra, there are many detailed elaborations of why we need to repay our parents, as given in the sutras, and there's this teaching there, but in many instances, with regard in the Chinese society, you know, we all feel that, you know, after you are ordained, you can't get back to your own house when you are a layman, and that's a very wrong idea to have. And that's because if you do not practice properly and then keep on going back to your layman's house and don't practice properly, this will be an obstacle. That's the reason for the saying. But of course, it doesn't mean that when you're ordained, you're no longer your parents' children. But we want to see everyone with equanimity. We need to make sure that we need to see all beings having been our mother, being our parents. And Rinpoche want me to tell a story which is there in the past to illustrate why we need to repay the kindness of our relatives, our parents, friends, enemies, etc. People whom we are indifferent towards, and these three category of people, well, we need to see them all as our parents. Now that's because we have a lots of doubts or question about why this is so, and that's because in India there is a disciple of the Buddha, and he also he has actually supernormal faculties and been able to see people's past lives and to see what are the causes, conditions that constitute a particular family, and one day see that somebody embracing, carrying a child, a baby, and the other hand is actually eating a fish, and in another way there is another dog that's waiting for the fish's bone to be passed on to the dog. And so this great disciple of the Buddha actually contemplated the causes as to how this came to be so, this scenario which he has seen. And so he actually recited the four verses, meaning that, eating the flesh of the father and but embracing the enemy, and then the mother has actually become a dog, and is awaiting the flesh, the leftover bones, and these bones are actually the bones of his of her husband in the past life. And when seeing these great disciple thinking, it's unbelievable, it's absolutely unbelievable, the workings of samsara. He's making this exclamation, and which means that because someone he has slayed, and the karmic debt actually results in this enemy becoming one's child, and the father became the fish, and the fish's bones, and being fed to the dog, and of course, what the dog is crunching upon is actually the bones of her past husband. So he thinks it's really unbelievable, the entire scenario, and so this is whatever is close, something that is intimate, and whatever is our enemy, they are all temporary and is never permanent, and superficial, it is temporary, it is like within husband and wife, they never stay on as husband and wife forever, and all comes because of causes and conditions, and we cannot say that, oh, I can never forgive my enemy, every wrong that the enemy has done to me, I shall hold on to the grudge and I shall get even with my enemy, and that's very unnecessary, especially from the point of view of Buddhism, and as to why the enemy is actually harming ourselves so deeply, and it's not of course without causes or condition, but it's actually due to past karmic actions as well, and hence coming out in the present form where the enemy comes to harm ourselves. So if we see matters through this way and this kind of understanding, and all these karmic actions in its life will be terminated finally. For example, when will this karmic retribution end if every party involved is trying to get even with one another? So if we're actually able to handle the matter through the Buddhist way, then the things will be terminated, and to do so we need to treat everyone with great equanimity. Means that all these parents of great kindness to ourselves, as to see all beings being as kind as our present day's parents, and will be able to actually get rid of our obscurations and to have accumulations towards Buddhahood. Through all this is equanimity, and to see that everyone has been our parents, and then we have to contemplate like that, which means that if we want to be happy, now similarly every sentient being themselves wish to be happy, and but the way in which they try to achieve happiness, they do not know how to do so. How to achieve happiness? They do not want to be have suffering, but generally everything that all sentient beings do are actually accumulations for further afflictions or suffering. They are doing lots of bad actions and resulting in suffering, so therefore the cause and the actions itself have all become a discrepancy between the cause and the result, and so it is becoming ceaseless, and so from our hearts, the compassion, the bodhicitta, we need to give rise to them. Hence, as Buddhist practitioner, this is what we need to do. So, which is also mean to say that as being Buddhists, this is a difference between ourselves and other spiritual system, or we can say our unique quality, which is that we always think of this is the bodhicitta. The bodhicitta is what differentiates ourselves from other religion. Therefore, we need to know that towards all sentient beings, and once they give rise to this great aspiration, this kind of great motivation of heart, and all the past Buddhas before they attain enlightenment, all these Buddhas also give rise to bodhicitta motivation like this, which means to benefit all beings first and later to attain enlightenment before attaining Buddhahood. So we also need to think that all our accumulations of merit and everything that we have, our material possessions, even our own body, all these can be given and can be dedicated to the welfare and for the sacrifice of all sentient beings. All this merit to be given towards bodhicitta, dedicated towards attainment of bodhicitta, towards all sentient beings, to sacrifice and give yourself to all beings as such. So they're saying this is a way to train our mind, transform our mind. Hey, whatever I have, all happiness and wealth, everything that I have, absolutely everything, the good things that I have, even during when I'm breathing, when I breathing out, when exhaling, everything good is given, dedicated to all. And when we're inhaling, we visualize that all beings sufferings and everything that do not wish for, and all these we shall inhale and shall accept into our hearts for all beings. For all beings, it's quite difficult for us to do so because they're very strong self-centeredness, and difficult for us to do so. But a true bodhisattva and the true bodhi, somebody who attain such enlightenment, now these beings can do so effortlessly and they derive joy from practices like that, because he has given out self, he has attained non-self, and everything you do is for the benefit and welfare of others. And even if for just one individual being suffering, he's willing to actually take on the sufferings for this one being. Now with this kind of thoughts which is like we are now unable to give our happiness to others and take on the suffering of others, and so through this way, through this manner, we need to visualize a soul. So even in daily life, all sentient beings wishing that all beings can be free from suffering and the causes of suffering, and all these sufferings that they are afflicted with, and these causes being all the negative actions being done, that all beings can be free from the causes of suffering, and wish that all beings can very fast attain enlightenment, embark the Bodhi path, and all beings all shall be able to attain Bodhi. If you attain Bodhi, why am I not happy? How could I not be happy? Now with this kind of Dharma joy and with such kind of motivation we need to dwell in, need to contemplate upon, now even if we can't do it, at least with the aspiration to attain this. Not just by thinking so, but also that all beings can all really leave suffering, attain happiness, and that's why we actually supplicate the Triple Gem to give us the blessing, the strength, towards to all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the Triple Gem, to pray that we shall have this kind of thought, we can accomplish this kind of thoughts, and are able to always do this, training the mind consistently. We are really be able to give up self, as being the self-cherishing, as being the central part of our life, which is so deep-rooted in ourselves, we can gradually loosen it, and then together with this, the mental affliction shall cease. Rinpoche is saying that, of course, about the above points that we say, we shouldn't think that, oh, I can't do it, and feel apprehensive about it, and but with regard to beginning a practitioner life, so to do these immediately is definitely difficult, but being a supposed Buddhist practitioner like self, that's enter into the Mahayana way, and also engage in the Vajrayana practices, students like these, we need to, if seeing a beggar on the floor by the side of the road asking for alms, food, money, etc., if it's not a lot, even be a spoonful, even if a penny, a small little bit of generosity, so we are also be able to give to the beggar from the depths of our heart, able to treat the beggar as being our parent, and with this kind of motivation and thought, we can give to the beggar, and the merits inconceivable, and slowly we shall get used and to habitualize the way of this practice, to gradually internalize and make improvements. Sobhaji, especially in the present age, many people kill, essentially commit the karma of killings, like in the slaughterhouses. This is their occupation now, just for the sake of our daily living. We are willing to actually sacrifice the lives of all these infinite number of beings, and all these beings, even though they can't explicate, they can't expose in the suffering like humans. So all these beings, even though they can't say it out in words, and but all the fear and the suffering these animals undergo is no different from that experienced by humans, and so we need to think for the sake of loving compassion towards all these beings, we could try to actually have lots of release life activities and to give rise to bodhicitta, and this will be of great help in our Dharma practice. So with regard to Tibet, and we are always engaging in different kinds of releasing of lives activities, cows and sheep, fishes and other sea organisms, birds, etc. All these great teachers in Tibet are always pushing the point to save animals from danger, to engage in these releasing of lives activities. Over here too, you should not feel that, oh, the environment here is difficult for us to engage in releasing our life, and so let's not do it, we don't have to do it, and to give up. But instead, we need to actually engage in things like this, and it's actually a very great help. For example, if you are at a seafood restaurant, when you're actually ordering the food from the menu, there are crabs, the scorpion, the lobsters, and we're ordering for our food. There is a Buddhist practitioner, when we are having our meal, whatever food that we are ordering, we actually need to think carefully that are we actually for the sake of fulfilling our food attachment, we kill others. So in order to prevent this, now for the sake of overindulgence in food, we shall commit so many negative actions, and one life is actually need to be retributed for with 500 karmic retribution. Is rather beyond thought, which means that inconceivable. So all beings treasure their lives as dearly as ourselves, as we cherish our own lives. So we really need to understand this point. This is not saying that that's just merely what they say. That's not true, but this is actually true, a very good logical deductions, and also from what the Buddha, who see all three times, past, present and future, and that's exactly what the Buddha said, speaking a truth, and is not saying something to scare us, that we need to believe in and abide by karmic laws. Hence, even for the sake of ourselves and towards others, and considering ourselves, we do not wish to have suffering, we only want happiness. So this is the same case for all beings, like whatever do not wish to be done upon yourself, don't do it to others. So, which means that from the point of generosity, release all these lies from danger, and this actually giving of fearlessness, offering of fearlessness, because what they face are actually fear, and to save all these beings from suffering, and this is also kind of generosity, and what we give them is their life. And do you understand? So, which means that we always treat our savior as our second parent. So you are able to give these animals their lives, the opportunity for them to continue living on. Then our kindness to these beings are great indeed. So what Rinpoche means, to benefit others, this is an activity where you can benefit all beings. So, if we can benefit being through releasing the lives of animals, and this is more virtuous than all other kinds of meritorious acts.
Oh,
So what it means, what is Apu? Now it actually means that Padre Rinpoche saying earlier on in the Dzogchen preliminary, in the words of the fat teacher, the author of this text, Padre Rinpoche, saying that bodhicitta and even thinking of bodhicitta in one session alone is like if you don't practice bodhicitta and in the generation state or the completion stage of this great inconceivable practice of the Vajrayana and all these, if you do so much practices of the Vajrayana and only externally the mantra recitation, etc. But without bodhicitta, all these practices are merely external and towards these practitioners and do not have within the mind, is not actually benefiting the heart of the mind, is cannot be counted as actual authentic practice. The real authentic practice is to give rise to the bodhicitta, and anyone who gives rise to bodhicitta can only then can the practitioner be considered a real practitioner, a practitioner with bodhicitta. So, where bodhicitta is concerned, if we have bodhicitta and we want to engage in the bodhisattva's path, this is all that we need. All the wisdom, all the skillful means are all encompassed within bodhicitta. But without bodhicitta on the surface, we can do all kinds of great activities, and in whatever manners that we actually show. These are all merely external illusory illusion, and actually of no benefit towards the path to enlightenment. So, if we have bodhicitta, then regardless of these on the coming lives, all the happiness and even greater happiness and only going towards happiness, and we will not face any suffering, and therefore this bodhicitta is something that on the path to enlightenment, and is an indispensable element or factor, is the most utmost important in our bodhicitta practice. So therefore, and there is this proverb saying, if your heart is good, what where you dwell or where you traverse, where you will be good. If your heart is no good, where you are, where you go, the place will not be good. Now everything is created or a reflection of our mind, as I say. Entire phenomena is but a reflection of our own mind, as you say. So therefore, truth is, we need to understand that everything, on every time, every moment, we need to really train and tame our mind, and to really understand and reflect on our mind clearly. For a person who is kind, regardless of where the person is, where the person goes, and everybody will like the person. Now, if person, the heart is no good, no matter where the person is, where the person goes, nobody will like him. So therefore, what it means is that everything good and bad, or the good or evil, the main factor that differentiates or decide this will be the heart. And therefore, if we have bodhicitta, everything good will come up from the source, which is bodhicitta. As I say, not to do any bad activities, engage in all good. The purifying ones, my, this is teaching of the Buddha, saying that anything that is of harmful to others, we should avoid and stop doing. Anything that's a benefit to others, and we should try or exert the greatest effort to accomplish anything that's good to others. And so it's very important, we need to actually watch our mind, to purify the mind, and to transcend, overcome afflicted mental states to that of the to the highest enlightenment. To actually have inward reflection, it means to purify our mind. Or the 84,000 kinds of teachings are actually encompassed within these four verses that the Buddha has said. So no matter what we say, most important thing is to have a very good heart, and that's a bodhicitta. So, Rinpoche saying this Dharma ending age, everything that was said above has all been perverted. There's a perversion of all the things that we are saying earlier on. Which means that everything that we have done, we try our best not to do the good things, but always doing everything, the bad things that is. So, and we do not train our mind, let it go loose, but we need to subdue other people's mind, not to subdue our own mind, like not to do all bad, to cultivate all good, to purify our mind. That's the teaching of all the Buddha. These four phrases of the Buddha is all been contradicted in the Dharma ending age. Now, now this includes like every day. Now, every day when they come in to do engage in Dharma program and so on. Now, we can't say not everybody, but of course they are very good, kind-hearted Lama. But there are some individual masters who are here, opportunistic endeavors, like masters from over Nepal to mother country, from Tibet, within China. There are people who think that lamas, monks, ordained masters, they try to invite these lamas over here, but these sangha actually are deceiving all their disciples, and there's this kind of fraudery, very skillful, sophisticated methods to actually engage in fraud and all these actions, things. So this is Dharma ending age, and this is a very obvious characteristic of the Dharma ending age. And in the past, the Buddha, Guru, Padmasambhava, all these beings have given the prophecy that in the future, and those people destroy the Dharma are not external, but actually the internal people. These people not engaging, not having engaging in proper livelihood, all these unreal monks, all these monks who are not actual sangha, not keep giving the precepts. And this is a very classical example, the Dharma ending age.
So, and
Now in China, it's everywhere in China. Now, I even heard that people are saying, oh, he's late because he had a coffee, Padmasambhava, which is why he's late for the Dharma program. So there is a bit of a delay, you're not able to keep up with time. So, and these people are able to talk big, and all these kind-hearted devotees actually believe in all these nonsense spoken by these masters, and it is something that we can't really do much about. In Tibet, there are not real lamas who wear the robes and go around asking for sheepskin and saying that. If you ask what you want the sheepskin for, they say, oh, I want the sheepskin to make the outer clothing for Padmasambhava. So he's going around to ask for rams in order to actually raise one for sheepskin for Guru Rinpoche. Now this is a rather ridiculous activity and in Tibet, and it's done by someone with great self-cherishing attitude, and with small food, with small incoming benefits, and through all these inconceivable activities engage in really, really bad actions, and this is unbelievable. So Rinpoche is saying that if you are able to engage in a meditation practice itself, then all the good actions is like the Bodhi tree will always grow forevermore, will always becoming bigger and better, and if you are not able to have this kind of bodhicitta motivation, not to engage in bodhicitta motivation like this, even if be it in one session, only once, and we can't really say that in the world there are many laymen who don't practice Dharma, or even they are also like ourselves, and doing good things, they are giving contribution, they are indeed are a lot, but all these actions, all these good virtuous activities, all these people will only have one time kind of positive attribution, but this it will exhaust it from there and can't go on forever, which means that this is a flawed kind of merit. And for example, with $1 you can earn two, but once you spend up to $2, that's all you're ever going to have. Like these normal virtuous activities that we do, the activities is great, but this is not like with bodhicitta, you engage in good actions. Now with good virtuous activities with bodhicitta, and the retributory actions will be ceaseless, and it's a flawless merit, flawless virtuous action. So every time when you do good merit, do good actions and accumulate merit, you should never forget bodhicitta. Then the subsequent result will be inconceivable, will be ceaseless, and it will forever be there, it will never diminish. So as we said earlier on, and all these advice earlier, these Shantideva in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, and saying that which is like the grass, the seaweed, and actions that will grow forevermore, like normal, a flawed meritorious action, which is like a straw, I think it's a straw, not a seaweed. It is a seaweed, which means every time after the growth of the seaweed, it will dry up and die. And this is a flawed meritorious action, but if you engage in a flawless meritorious action, which is actions done with bodhicitta, the fruits of which we can always be using over and over again, and it will never be used up. And this is like what Shantideva said, and we already if we possess the bodhicitta, and with bodhicitta we engage in the good actions, and everything that we do in our everyday living, all this negative karma can all be exhausted and can all be encompassed over with all the good actions, and which means, and it will then also not become a cause of our future obstacles in our path to enlightenment, so and to cause us rebirth in the three lower realms. All the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that we say earlier on, and this is only the sole path of bodhicitta. Engaging practice with bodhicitta, each and every Buddha and Bodhisattva uses bodhicitta, harness bodhicitta, harbor bodhicitta in the Dharma practice, and this is something that we don't have to say much further about.
他说作为一个法师,
as somebody who has given rise to bodhicitta, now regardless of whether it's our guru, Rinpoche, Kimpo, Lamas, or even if our lay disciples, and they are all equal, there is no high, there's no low, is only what we can say is whether their bodhicitta is great or small. We can't say that only the bodhicitta generated by Lamas are good, our generation of bodhicitta is no good. It's not that. Now the difference is there is not saying that somebody is high or low. There's only difference. There's no difference in the bodhicitta generated by laymen or the Rinpoches. Now especially now in the Vajrayana and towards all sentient beings, especially with regard to male or female, and is the in the Vajrayana Samaya saying that the female is of a higher potential than the male. So, but in the Vajrayana, there is no such saying that male or female each has having an advantage over the other. So therefore, and in our daily living, in our we have to try our very best not to forget bodhicitta. And if you have bodhicitta, and your daily living, and even our work, we will be able to fulfill our wishes, you know, and we'll be able to live a happy life with bodhicitta. So, like bodhicitta, never forget impermanence. If you don't use impermanence to actually motivate ourselves, we'll never be able to remind ourselves properly. We will not want to do Dhamma practice. But we know and remember of our impermanence, then it won't be difficult to remind ourselves that we need to do the Dhamma practices.
Get the poor on the genie to give us.